Chapter 12. Information requested. The Four Holy Peaks. Beginning report. Sacred Valley is a paradise nestled within a mountain range. It is protected by weather and terrain, by the inhospitable nature of the surrounding regions, by ancient legend, and by a few significant individuals with vested interest in keeping the valley unexplored. Most of the world has forgotten Sacred Valley, overlooking it as nowhere of interest. But it has a long history, and that history has left its mark. The four mountains bracketing Sacred Valley are known to the locals as the Holy Peaks, locations of myth and mystery. The four largest schools in the region have each claimed a peak as their home, and the secrets found within have given these organizations strong roots. To the north, Yoma Mountain is carpeted in purple orris trees for most of the year. The Fallen Leaf School processes the fruits of these trees into products to be sold, as well as secret elixirs to strengthen their own students. They also possess the largest and most obvious entrance into the labyrinth that forms the foundation of the entire Sacred Valley, an entrance they call the Nether Gate. The door stands 30 meters high and is carved with the image of a dread god. Every 10 years, it opens, and the Fallen Leaf elders are able to retrieve some treasures from the shallowest levels of the labyrinth within. To the west, Mount Venture shows off its distinct mineral composition with rust-red cliffs. It is the shortest of the four peaks, and most of the mining in Sacred Valley takes place here. This is the home of the Kazan clan, and the territory of the Golden Sword School, and the profits of the mine are split between them. Gold, steel, and half-silver are the primary output of these mines, though a further report can be requested on especially rare or trivially mundane materials. To the south, the mountain called Great Father is broken, its peak shattered into a shape resembling the mouth of a bottle. Water pools up there, cascading down the cliffs in a stream known as the Dragon River. Fueled by the water aura at the top of the mountain, storms rack these slopes year-round, and the Holy Wind School maintains shelters for unlucky travelers caught outside. Favored Holy Wind elders can bathe in the pool known as Great Father's Tears, regenerating their vitality of body and spirit. To the east, Mount Samara rises as the tallest of the four holy peaks. It is blanketed in snow and crowned in a ring of pale white light that circles the summit. The halo appears at sundown and disappears at sunrise, so that no one in Sacred Valley has ever experienced a dark night. Samara's halo is a construction of light aura bound into form by an expert centuries past, and it is the reason why so many sacred artists in the valley practice light aspect arts. The Heaven's Glory School has claimed this peak, using the power of Samara's ring to gather light aura even on a moonless night. Suggested topic: Origin of the Holy Peaks. Continue. Denied. Report complete. Without the lungs of an iron, Lyndon couldn't make his voice heard in every corner of the arena, but he shouted as loud as he could.
Honored representative of the Heaven's Glory School, this one regrets that his display has caused you shame, and he begs one more chance to prove himself.
In the box above, the boy in white and gold stepped forward. His expression was cold and forbidding, as though he wished to have Lyndon executed before he said another word.
Why should I give you such a chance?
Wei Jin Amon is to become a disciple of your school, is that not so?
Amon, startled, looked from Lyndon to the Heaven's Glory agent.
If this one manages to force him out of the ring, or cause him to admit defeat, then this one has surely demonstrated his own value. This one requests a place in your school under those conditions.
The boy let out a single high laugh.
My school only receives those with potential. You have none.
This one does not dare to contradict you, honored guest, but if this one can by chance overthrow Amon, then surely this one has proven his skill. And with the tutelage of the Heaven's Glory School, surely such skill has future potential.
Wei Jin Cyrus had too high of a status to seize Lyndon and hurl him bodily from the stage, but it looked as though he wanted to.
You go too far,
he thundered, but the Heaven's Glory Elder raised a hand to stop him.
We've wasted too much time already on this nonsense, the boy said. Let him fight! Wei Jin Amon, ensure he has no time to admit defeat!
The cold words sent a chill up Lyndon's spine, but he bowed again.
Does that mean the Heaven's Glory School accepts my words?
We do, so long as the Wei clan accepts the consequences of your loss.
Certainly,
Cyrus declared.
One unsold is no loss to my clan. An honorable death in a duel is more than he has earned.
Lyndon glanced up in the stands. Kelsa looked horrified. Zaran was half-standing in fury, and the First Elder shook his head sadly. None of them could intervene. Only his mother frowned, as though considering something.
Sacred artists, prepare yourselves,
the patriarch shouted. His grandson ran a hand along the spear, face as cold as his iron badge. Lyndon leaned forward as far as he could, as though he meant to dash into Amon immediately.
Begin!
Lyndon ran the other way. A surge of laughter burst from the stands as they watched the foundation stage child run from the iron practitioner. Amon didn't deign to pursue, but straightened up, his spear locked in his fist.
Do you want to shame me into chasing you?
He asked, in a tone too low to carry.
Is that your plan?
Lyndon didn't answer. When he reached the edge of the stage, he turned to face his cousin.
This one patiently awaits your guidance, he said politely.
When Amon moved, Lyndon could barely see it. He seemed to cross a dozen yards in a single step, the foxfire gathered around his spearhead tracing lines in the air like shining serpents. But he wasn't faster than Lyndon's spirit. He sent a pulse of Madra down through his heel, into the stage, undoing the seal he'd placed on a jar 3 days earlier.
Be free,
he urged mentally, and the remnants shattered their prison. They followed the weak thread of his power up and through the stone, passing through like ghosts. A swarm of green light hornets spun around Lyndon like emeralds, buzzing with fury. His command still bound them.
Attack!
As one, the remnants turned to face Weijin Amon. The iron fighter pulled himself up short, skidding to a halt on the stone, but he'd been moving too fast. He couldn't stop in time. Not that the remnants would have allowed him to escape anyway. They were on him like a school of ravenous fish, stingers flashing as they stung. No one could display the dignity of a sacred artist under such a condition. He screamed like a child, flailing his spear as though he'd never had an hour of weapons training, swatting wildly at the air around him. For a few seconds, Lyndon only watched. When he saw pulses of hazy purple and white force emanating from Amon's body, causing hornets to pause or turn spirals in midair, he knew that his cousin had focused his spirit on defense. Now was the chance. Lyndon walked forward, and the remnants parted before him. Amon was still dangerously strong, his spear sweeping through the air, and Lyndon took an instant to judge its path before he reached out and caught it. The wood smacked painfully into his palm, but not with nearly the force a true attack would have carried. Amon's spirit was in chaos, his madra bent to swiping away hornets, and he had not focused his strength. With both hands, Lyndon wrenched the weapon away. Amon didn't seem to understand what had happened as he stumbled blindly forward. While everyone in the clan who reached at least copper received instruction in a basic weapon, Lyndon had never had such an opportunity. He had no idea how to use a spear beyond imitating what he'd seen in others. Fortunately, he didn't need much skill. He gripped the spear in both hands like a club and began smacking Weijin Amon everywhere he could. The sharp edge of the spear caught him a few times, drawing blood, but Amon was an iron. He was in far more danger from the remnants than from Lyndon's pathetic attacks. Lyndon couldn't deny a little excitement. He'd dreamed of this moment for years. Under assault from the hornets and his own weapon, Amon's screams turned to sobs.
I don't,
he tried to force out, but Lyndon didn't lessen his assault.
I give,
he began, and that was too much. Lyndon walked around to the other side of his cousin, reversing his spear until the butt rested against Amon's chest. Then he gave a shove. The iron-ranked fighter tumbled to the ground outside the stage. The arena was silent except for Amon's sobs and the buzz of the remnants, who continued their attack until they received another wave of Lyndon's madra. When they did, they responded as a swarm.
Task completed.
Then they flew off into the sky. No one stopped them. Someone like the patriarch could surely have destroyed them had he wanted to, but even he seemed paralyzed. His face grew red as he stared at Lyndon, his mouth gaping open as though he couldn't give voice to his fury. Before he could say anything, Lyndon bowed to the foreign guests once more.
Weijin Amon has admitted defeat and left the bounds of the competition.
Another instant of silence, except for the pathetic sounds made by Amon, and then the boy from Heaven's Glory began to laugh.
Is this the honor and dignity of the Wei clan, then? One child attacks another for a lowly position in my school, fighting over our scraps.
The air warped around Patriarch Cyrus, and Lyndon was sheathed in absolute darkness. The Patriarch had blinded him. Only that morning, Lyndon would have panicked and begged forgiveness. But after seeing Suriel's display of power, this one was somewhat lacking.
"Forgive us, Elder Whitehall," Cyrus said. "We will punish the unsold."
Elder? That child was a jade? Lyndon hadn't gotten a look at the boy's badge, but that seemed incredible.
"No!"
Elder Whitehall barked.
"The Heaven's Glory School has given its word, and a child cannot cause us to break it. We will harbor Weishi Lyndon for as long as he can perform up to the standard of a Heaven's Glory disciple."
Which wouldn't be long, Lyndon was sure, but it didn't have to be. He only had to find Yeren, the Sword Sage's disciple, and leave the valley.
"But we only came down from Samara for one disciple,"
the elder continued.
"We have no room for two. Have your grandson meditate on his failures, and perhaps when we again have space for a new disciple, we will consider him once more."
The darkness over Lyndon lifted, and he dropped to his knees to press his forehead against the cold stone.
"Disciple Lyndon greets Elder Whitehall."
"Don't buy your own lies," said the boy in gold and white. "If you last a week on the mountain, I'll tutor you myself."
The rest of the 7-year festival passed without incident, as far as Lyndon was concerned. His veiled questions to his family about a gold from the Lee clan or the phoenix that descended from the sky were met with confused looks and careful inquiries. His mother, at least, was worried that someone on the path of the White Fox had tampered with his perception. Kelsa ended up as the highest-ranking young iron in the Wei clan, as Weijin Amon was too busy recuperating from his injuries to participate. She ultimately lost to a Kazan girl, but that wasn't enough to tarnish her achievements. The Patriarch himself presented her with a pair of valuable elixirs, announcing that she would redeem the shame of the Shi family. After receiving her prizes, Kelsa returned to the Shi family compound with Lyndon by her side. She spoke about the festival with great enthusiasm and without interference. He walked in silence.
"I'll need one of these elixirs to stabilize my core after reaching iron, but the second won't help much. They say it takes 20 of these to get close to jade. Can you imagine? They're 5,000 chips apiece, and that's with years of cycling in between each one."
She glanced to the side, giving him a wry smile. The box of elixirs was tied in a cloth bag, and that bag dangled carelessly from her hand as she walked.
"I'd share one with you, but I doubt you'll need it. Heaven's Glory. You'll be eating spirit fruits for every meal and drinking elixirs like water. Instead of sharing with you, I should be asking you to share with me."
Lyndon knew Kelsa. She wasn't angling for a handout, just making an idle comment. If he actually offered to share any elixirs from Heaven's Glory with her, she'd refuse unless he tricked her into it. But the thought gave him a pang of loss and regret. If all went according to plan, he wouldn't see Kelsa or the rest of his family for more than 20 years. It was an impossible amount of time to him, incomprehensibly vast. She read his silence and stopped, stretching out an arm in front of his chest. He ran into it as though into a tree branch, her forearm striking his ribs with the strength of a club. He coughed out a breath, and the weight of his pack pushed him forward, straining his neck. He staggered back, wondering if his chest would bruise.
"What was that?"
"You're too quiet,"
she said, folding her arms. The box of elixirs hung down in its blue shade silk bag.
"Something happened."
He pressed fingers into his sternum, feeling for tenderness.
"I'm listening. I'm not meditating on boyhood trauma. Maybe I should do all the talking from now on, and you should take the punches."
She stared him down.
"You can punch me as long as your knuckles hold out. But when you're done, I need an answer. You've won everything you've ever wanted. More than I did. There are people who would kill you for a spot as a school disciple. And you're not proud of it. You haven't gloated. You haven't tried to get something extra out of the clan before you leave. You haven't even redeemed that deal of yours with the First Elder, and he told me he'd expected to see you before sunset on the day of the Foundation Tournament. When you didn't show up, he thought you were dead."
The deal he'd made with the First Elder, a copy of the White Fox Path in exchange for displaying his abilities in the 7-year festival, felt like it had come from a different life. He'd been dreaming before he met Suriel. And now, he was awake. Not that he could say that to his sister.
"My end of the scales doesn't balance," Lyndon said. "I was supposed to defeat a copper from another clan and show them the power of the Way, but I ended up humiliating our own clan's best disciple."
Kelsa placed the elixirs carefully on the ground, then grabbed him by the shoulders. She leaned forward, her face inches away from his, dark eyes heavy with concern.
"Are you dead? Because that is nothing my brother would say. My brother would have tried to convince the First Elder that beating Amon was better than beating some copper from another clan.
Lyndon shrugged, averting his eyes.
I'm going to a school. I won't need it anymore.
He wasn't concerned about keeping Cyril a secret. Spreading rumors about her couldn't harm her, and receiving a visit from the heavens was a source of pride, not shame. If that had been all, he would have been trying to convince his sister to believe him, not keeping it a secret. But he'd seen more than just a celestial messenger. He'd seen the end of the world. There was nothing Kelsa could do to change that, nothing she could do to help him. Even if she completely believed him and was willing to leave Sacred Valley at his side, how could she help? She wasn't a disciple of Heaven's Glory, so she couldn't follow him up the slopes of Samara, and she wasn't strong enough to survive the terrors outside the valley any more than he was. If he failed, if he died on the way, as he was more than likely to do, he didn't want her to live helpless under a cloud of doom. She'd be happier if he said nothing. All that was true, but he still wanted to tell her. She was still watching him from an inch away, still looking into his eyes with selfless concern. He found himself saying,
"Was there anything you can remember from that day at the Foundation Tournament? Anything strange?"
Her eyebrows raised. "I'd say so. You set a swarm of hornets on Wei Jin Amon and beat him with his own spear."
"Anything else?"
Now it was his turn to search her eyes, looking for any sign of recognition, any uneasy recollections.
"You didn't feel like you were somewhere and then somewhere else. You didn't lose any memories or forget some time."
"How would I know if I did?"
she asked. Whatever he was looking for in her eyes, he didn't see it. He took a step back, and she allowed him to break her grip.
"I'm nervous, that's all it is," he said. "Heaven's Glory won't accept a disciple like me, and they'll try and force me out as soon as they can."
Kelsa watched him a moment longer, then plucked her bag of elixirs from the ground.
"Likely they will. What does that matter? You'll take what you can from them, then if it gets too dangerous, you just come back down. Maybe you'll get an elixir or some treasures from the top of the mountain. This could be exactly what you need to make the clan proud."
They reached the Shi family complex, a square of tightly packed houses, as night fell. The ring of light around Samara glowed white, illuminating the snowy peak and casting a blanket of light all over the valley. He took in the sight of his home under Samara's ring as though for the last time. In the morning, his mother and father said their goodbyes casually, and they'd all assured him that he would be welcomed back exactly as he was. They didn't understand why he fought back tears as he wished them farewell, because they expected him to return in no more than a week or two. But in the end, he still had to leave. He'd seen too much to stay home. The party from Heaven's Glory was led by Elder Whitehall, who was indeed a head shorter than Lyndon. He looked no more than 11 or 12, despite his intricate white and gold robes and the jade arrow badge on his chest. He waited with two disciples from his school before a carriage pulled by a pair of remnants. The carriage itself looked finer than anything the Patriarch would ride, inlaid with golden clouds and dancing sacred beasts, and the remnants were a pair of transparent oxen. They seemed to be made from heat haze, or perhaps incredibly fine glass, and, like most remnants, they made sounds totally unlike a living creature. When they stomped their hooves, thunder rolled, and their fractious snorts were like the crack of a whip.
"You've made us wait,"
Elder Whitehall said, though it was still an hour until dawn. Samara's halo still shone brighter than the moon, crowning and illuminating their destination.
"Stow your belongings before you set us further behind."
The two disciples glanced at Lyndon more out of curiosity than pity, he was sure. Then they climbed into the carriage behind their master. Lyndon had tied his bulky pack to the roof before he noticed what they were missing, a driver.
"Hurry yourself, Unsold,"
the elder called from inside the carriage.
"I have business to attend to at the school."
Without a word of dissent, Lyndon clambered up onto the driver's seat behind the oxen. Even this was cushioned, though the only carriages he'd ever ridden in the Wei clan had undressed boards for the driver. He was grateful for the comfort and for the lack of company. With an instant of concentration, he sent a drop of Madra into the reins. A line of script ran down the inside of the leather straps, carrying his power down and into the ox remnants. They bellowed like a couple of thunderstorms, transparent forms rippling with light, and they began to pull. After that, the trip was easy. At first, Lyndon was concerned that he might have to ask Elder Whitehall for directions, but he discovered that the path toward Samara was clear and wide. They rode for hours as the sun rose, the terrain sprouted hills, and the purple-leafed orris trees gave way to foliage of mundane green. Mount Samara's halo faded and dimmed as they approached, eventually vanishing for the day. The mountain's slopes were sparse, sprinkled with the occasional copse of twisted trees or the spot of color from a flying remnant. The mountain loomed over them as noon broke, like a wall taking up half the horizon. The road terminated at the base of the mountain, transforming into a dirt path that twisted upward in a series of switchbacks. Lyndon hesitated as he saw the trail, but the oxen didn't, hauling their way up the mountain with dogged determination. Within seconds, Elder Whitehall must have sensed the change.
"Halt!"
he called, and Lyndon had no choice but to urge the remnants to stop their advance on a steep slope. They supported the carriage as though their hooves had been nailed to the side of the mountain. The childlike elder hopped out of the carriage, his disciples following like chaperones. But when they reached the ground, they bowed to Elder Whitehall, saluting with their fists pressed together. Lyndon left the driver's seat and did likewise. There was no sense in disrespecting an elder before even arriving at the school. Whitehall paid them no attention, walking to their right, skirting the edge of the mountain.
The three of you will walk a different path up the mountain. This is the first test of any disciple in the Heaven's Glory School.
Lyndon was somewhat surprised to learn that the other two were in the same category as he was. They were both older, but only by a year or two, and very little set them apart. One was as tall as Lyndon, with brown hair a shade darker than his mother's, the other shorter, with black hair. Otherwise, they were wholly unremarkable. Unremarkable except for the iron badges on their chests. Every glance they shot at Lyndon's wooden badge poked a needle in his pride. He only had to bear with it. They would never make it past Jade. They were almost to the end of their path. His was just beginning. A number of boulders dotted the landscape where part of the mountain must have slid down years before, and each step of Elder Whitehall's took him from one boulder to another. The iron disciples followed him without difficulty, but Lyndon strained his body to the limit just to keep up. More than once, he came teetering within an inch of falling off the rock and smashing his head, and he was sure he wouldn't receive the best of medical care from the Heaven's Glory School. They arrived in less than an hour, with the elder and the other two disciples as fresh as if they'd simply stepped outside. Lyndon's clothes were caked with sweat, each breath heaving, his spirit fuzzy and weak from the mantra he'd drawn to support his failing limbs. Whitehall and the other two were looking up the mountain, and though it pained him to even turn his neck, he followed their gazes. Into the slopes of Mount Samara, there was a staircase. Rather than the rough, gray-brown stone that surrounded him, these stairs were polished and white. It was so wide that 100 men could march up side by side, and it appeared to progress up the mountain in a straight line. Beyond a few hundred steps, Lyndon could see no further. After that, the path was obscured by clouds of light. Shapes moved within the light, shadows with twisted antlers and gaping jaws. Even the two iron disciples eyed the cloud with apprehension.
"Behold, the trial of glorious ascension,"
Whitehall said proudly. Lyndon had to admire whichever ancient leader of the Heaven's Glory School came up with the name. It was only a staircase with some remnant formations on it, but they had left such a proud and lofty title.
"Within that cloud are a few of the spirit aspect and mind aspect remnants our school has tamed over the generations,"
Whitehall continued.
"We'll test your resolve, your determination, and the solid foundations of your spirit. With each step you climb, the trial will become heavier. Past a certain point, retreat is impossible. If you have no confidence, you may give up your title as a Heaven's Glory disciple and return to your home. I will tell you that 1 in 3 disciples who challenges this trial either dies or has their spirit broken, unable to practice the sacred arts again."
The boy stared directly at Lyndon.
"I expect that statistic is especially appropriate today. Would any of you like to withdraw?"
All three of them looked at Lyndon, but he maintained an open and honest expression, as though he didn't realize what they expected of him. After a minute of silence, the elder dismissed Lyndon, turning to the other two.
"If you reach the top, you will have passed, and will be considered a disciple of the Heaven's Glory School. If you reach the top before sundown, however, then we will consider you to have a bright future. In that case, you will be allowed to select 1 item from the school's lesser treasure hall for your personal use. There are weapons, training supplements, elixirs, constructs. Even some elders cannot choose freely from the hall. Use whatever means you have at your disposal, and do not take this trial lightly."
The other two disciples straightened up, and the short one's eyes lit up. But Lyndon's heart blazed. Even the Way Clan's treasure hall was enough to stir his imagination and longing, but the Heaven's Glory Hall had to be an unknown number of times greater. Now he had to reach the top before sunset. Only, he glanced up at the cloud, where a pair of silhouettes clashed with each other in a silent, distant battle. Shadow liquid sprayed in the air. That was a test designed for promising young irons and genius coppers. There was no way he could survive. So he had to find a different way. Elder Whitehall jumped at the staircase, skipping 6 steps at a time.
When I reach the cloud, you may begin. I'll see those of you who survive at the peak.
In seconds, he vanished into the light. The two iron disciples exchanged a few brief words with each other and then ran after, not sparing Lyndon a glance. That suited him, as he had immediately left.